No, I've mentioned it before. I still remember a particular time in high school. Went over to the fridge, I was hungry. Love to tell you that hungry was something that happened to me. It was more like a constant state I lived with. You know, there was more hungry and there was less hungry, but it was always hungry. I'm going over to the fridge, opening the door, and examining the contents of the fridge, and I couldn't have been there more than a few seconds before my mother said something along the lines of, "You already know what's in the fridge. There's lunch meat in there, there's sandwiches, there's leftovers from last night, I know there's a couple of green vegetables in there from a couple nights ago, and there's some rice, and I know there's might even be a little piece of chicken from earlier in the day. Just decide what you're going to get, and then open the fridge and take it." And I looked at my mother and I said, "Those things were all there this morning, but they're not now. I was hungry in the morning, and they're all gone now, and I'm looking in the fridge because I have to find something new." She didn't believe me. She actually came over and discovered I was in fact not exaggerating. But that's one of those things that it always fascinates me in so many ways, that we can become very focused on what God is going to do for us right this second, and very quickly we can kind of forget what was already there, what we already had, the opportunities to have. It's fascinating in so many ways. You know, we have this moment in the book of Exodus, and I think about this so many ways. They found themselves in Egypt. The people of God, the chosen people, found themselves in Egypt because God took them there. Called Abraham out of the land of Ur to the land flowing with milk and honey, this promised land, this land where his descendants would grow. He told them that this is where they would be. So Abraham stayed there, and he had a son, Isaac, and Isaac had two sons, and Jacob had 12 sons, and they were growing in the land, just like God asked them to, just as God had invited them to. They were following his promise that God had led them to. But then they went down to Egypt, because God led them there. Terrible famine, lasting several years, lasting a long time, continuing. So they went down to Egypt, where they were secured, and they knew they could grow safely and in prosperity. And then they find themselves in slavery. I know, it didn't happen all of a sudden. They didn't return to the promised land either. But God had a plan. Fascinating thing about it is that in order for this plan to come to its fulfillment, they spent this period in slavery. And the people cry out to God. The people beg God to take us away from them. They beg God to intercede, to step in, to do something, because I don't get the impression that slavery is all that enjoyable an experience, that, you know, that they would cry out to God on a constant basis in the hopes that he would do something. The thing that's very important for us to take notice is that they spent this time in this hardship, and it looked like God had become indifferent, or that he wasn't there, or that he was somehow just uncaring to their plight. But the fact is that there was a plan in place. Moses was a part of that plan. He invites Moses over so that he might tell him this plan, so he might share with him that it is time for him to go back to Egypt to restore these people back to all the promises that God had given them. The thing that's fascinating me, that really strikes me, is that it takes that time of separation, allowing God to bring his plan to fulfillment, that sometimes we forget, that sometimes we don't really want to consider, that we might have that kind of difficulty, that we might have that difficult time of frustration or separation where we're struggling with something, where we're really wrestling with something, and we want God to intervene, we want God to step in, we want God to continue to give the good gifts that he has done throughout our entire life, and we want him to step up once again and rescue us from this plight. But God does not move in instantaneous fashion, because that's not part of his plan. In the grand scheme of his plan, he actually has these longer goals. And it takes our patience. The thing that I find equally fascinating is how it positions itself against the gospel. See, the gospel, what we see is them calling out for God as well. But there's a strong warning here. Because while they are convinced that God should step in as soon as they need their plight restored, as soon as they have their difficulty, as soon as the people of God are struggling with something, they want God to immediately step up. Equally so, they believe that God's just going to knock them off the face of the earth as soon as they step out of line. And, you know, they walk that precarious little line where they're doing well, and if they're suffering, then God should step in. And, you know, if they step out of line, then God should strike them down immediately. The Galileans who were destroyed in the Tower of Siloam, or in so many ways, the Galileans who led a rebellion, and Pilate had executed them for leading a rebellion, that somehow they were the greatest of sinners, and that this is the justice system, that the greatest sinners get to cut down and everyone else should be rescued. The thing that fascinates me is that God pours out his gifts on us constantly. God offers us not only opportunities to grow in love and grace, but constantly shows us witness of his love and reminders of his love through so many signs and symbols and wonders each and every day. Why are we suddenly convinced that God's trying to chop us off the moment we wander away? Even more fascinating is this challenge that actually comes up when we consider it. Where is our part in all of this? I mean, do not underestimate that God pours out his gifts each and every day. God gives us these great and wonderful things all the time. He's constantly trying to show us not only his mercy and his love, but constantly trying to remind us that he is present for us in so many ways. What do we do in response? What are we doing in return for all of the gifts and fruits that God tries to give to us? It's fascinating to me, but the parable that Jesus actually presents is something that really should make us all stop and consider for a moment exactly what it is that we're doing. Because in this parable, we have this fruitless fruit tree. I mean, it's one thing when I got mad and I yelled at my mother because there was no fruit on the tree in front of our house, until she pointed out to me that it was a maple tree and it wasn't going to ever have fruit on it at all. It's quite another when you have a fruit tree that is, in fact, fruitless. When it is, in fact, not bearing anything. It gets nurtured and encouraged and given the opportunity to grow. It is fed and fertilized. What are we doing? It's interesting, as I was thinking about the readings, I was thinking about what had gone on in the last few weeks. I had three funerals the week before that, or last week, and then this past week I had a funeral on Monday, and a funeral on Friday, and a funeral yesterday, and I have a funeral on Tuesday, so I've been thinking a lot about death recently. I have no idea why. I'm sure it's just purely coincidental, but it's a troubling thing in so many ways, but really a call and a reminder for so many of us. But when we come face to face with the reality that one day all of us will call when we stand before God, the real question we will be asked is, what do we do with the gifts that we were given? Were we fruitful from the many things that God wanted to give us? From the church that he gave us, to the sacraments that he offers, to the constant reminders and little ways of all the ways that God does in fact care and wishes to show his love to his children, how do we respond in fruitfulness? How do we respond to the gifts that we have? It's fascinating to me, but, you know, I don't get asked as often as I used to, but I still get asked from time to time. People will come up and say, well, Father, surely God wouldn't send anyone to hell. I mean, surely God is not a loving God if he'd send someone to hell. Why would that ever happen? Isn't he a good God? My response is always twofold. First of all, don't call me surely. And really, second of all, God doesn't choose anyone to go to hell. We choose it for ourselves. You see, the fact is God placed us in this world because he didn't want to overwhelm us and force us to make a decision that we didn't want to make for ourselves. So he gave us this opportunity to live in this life and live a life whether or not we wanted to spend it with God. And we spend our days investing ourselves in God, trying to live that life, trying to cultivate that relationship with him, trying to improve upon this, knowing full well that we will fail, we will fall, we will struggle, we will have difficulties. If we continue to long and strive and do everything we can to grow in this relationship with God, then that day when we stand before him, he will invite us to live with him, because that is how we've lived here. But if we spend our days trying to get away from God and ignoring anything that he has to offer and trying to distance ourselves further and further from Him in this life. Why would God punish us by forcing us to live with Him for all of eternity? The fact of the matter is, we are called to live for God today, to be fruitful with the gifts that we have received, to live on into this fruitfulness because God is trying to cultivate something within us. And if we don't want it, well, we're free to walk away. We really are. And don't get me wrong, I know I'm preaching to the choir, you all showed up here on a Sunday morning. I mean, you obviously have a commitment that you want to have, a life with God. What we must never underestimate is that we constantly want to grow this and ask ourselves genuinely, especially in this time of Lent, how are we being fruitful for God? Are we a witness of love to our neighbor, to our community? Do we grow in these gifts? Or are we just ignoring them? We're just trying to serve our own interests instead.